Shattering Myths. We have IQ Al Rasuli with us again this Friday. IQ has written three books called Unmasking Islam. They're all about lifting the veil, the true faces of Muhammad and Islam in three different volumes. And in the midst of lifting the veil, presenting the true face of Muhammad and of Islam, IQ presents a number of things that are wholly inaccurate, as they either presented in the Quran or ascribed to the Quran. And we are examining them. Now, the reason that IQ, Al Rasuli, and I are examining these things is because, not because that we don't think that people shouldn't be able to choose their religion. It's that because the religion of Islam is responsible for 99% of the terrorist acts perpetrated in the world today. The religion of Islam has deprived 1.5 billion Muslims of a decent life. It is the most oppressive, the most uncivilized, the most destructive, and the most deadly doctrine ever conceived by man. And so by exposing and condemning the flaws inherent in this religion, particularly these attributable to the Quran, we expose this religion and give moral, informed, rational and compassionate people the motivation to oppose it as we do. IQ, welcome to the program. It's good to have you you back. For our audience, during our first hour, I mentioned that we're going to have a guest on the first hour on Monday, somebody that you actually introduced me to, a man who has written about how the Stockholm Syndrome, sometimes called the Helsinki Syndrome, has had such a pervasive influence on Islam. The gentleman who wrote that article is going to be our guest on Monday morning.
I'm really glad he is. He's unbelievable. He really is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's one of the most brilliant pieces that I have ever seen on Islam in terms of the quality of the research and the relentless application of reason in getting to this point. And so not only asked him to be on the show, we've exchanged a number of emails. He and the site that his articles appear on, both individuals came to be motivated to study Islam based upon reading Prophet of Doom. It was the catalyst in both of their journeys, and both have gone well beyond it. But it is interesting that Prophet of Doom did play a role in motivating both of them to study Islam more completely.
In many of my talks, by the way, I have always said that Prophet of Doom should be mandatory education in all levels of the United States of America, whether it is in the State Department, the CIA, FBI, should have been mandatory education.
Now, I appreciate that. And IQ, the reason that I am fond of recommending Prophet of Doom is that it's not because of anything that I did. It's just that Prophet of Doom does the one thing that is the most important to do relative to Islam. It takes the Quran, which is an absolute jumbled mess that has no chronology and no context, and it reorders it chronologically and puts it into the context of Muhammad's life using the four hadith collections that that one can consider to be authoritative, if you will. There were four hadith collections that were compiled within 200 years of Muhammad's death that are credible. And so to the degree that we know anything about Muhammad, it is contained in those books. And so I used the history of Islam that was compiled by Tabati, the biography of Muhammad that was compiled by Ishaq, both hadith but put into chronological order, and the two topical presentations of hadith, one by Bukhari, the other by Muslim, to simply actually put the Quran into chronological order and to set it into the context of Muhammad's life so that it could be understood. Having spent so many years now translating the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, one of the first things that you come to realize is that if you remove a statement from context, it's almost impossible to understand it. And yet when you view a statement in context, all of a sudden, you understand what is being said and why it's being said. And so it was by putting the Quran in chronological order and into the context of Muhammad's life that the founder of the religion of Islam is exposed. And what you are left with is reprehensible. What you find is that the Quran is easily the worst book ever written. By any rational standard, the Quran is the most foolish book ever written, and that Muhammad was perhaps the most repulsive man to have ever lived. And that's not hyperbole. The evidence is irrefutable. It is overwhelming. That's why Prophet of Doom is a 1,000-page book.
I cannot disagree with you on any of them because I came to the same conclusion from my own research.
Yes.
Muhammad was definitely the most vile creature that ever walked the earth. And I always repeat, whenever it's appropriate, that studying the Quran Hadith, self-destruct the Quran and Hadith. Literally,
yes.
Self-destruct.
Yes. That's correct. The more you know, so long as you're a rational individual, the more you know about Muhammad and his wannabe God, Allah, and his pathetic recital, the more you come to despise them. So knowledge, in this case, is power. And it's such a shame, then, that so few people take it upon themselves to study the foundational documents that create the religion of Islam. When Muslims are responsible not only for 99% of the terrorist acts perpetrated on the world today, but that they are the most enraged and the most impoverished people on the planet. And if you just look at it, you'd say, why don't more people care about, for example, liberating women from Islam, since women are enslaved by this religion? Why don't people care? Why don't people want to undermine a dogma that is so caustic to everything that would normally be considered good?
Well, it can't be considered good, and it is toxic, because Muhammad did not allow his followers to have any joy whatsoever.
No.
He prohibited them from joy on earth, promising them unbelievable pleasures in his whorehouse version of paradise after death.
Yeah, but even his whorehouse in paradise with the 72 virgins who maintained their virginity, that's all about conquest. It's all about imposing your will on another person. There is nothing even remotely associated with love and the joy that comes from love, the happiness that is derived from love and relationships in the Islamic paradise. It's about the constant conquest of virgins.
Absolutely. That's why they can't do it on earth. That's why they rape women on earth. That's
right.
Why they rape even Muslim women on earth. That's what's happening now in Egypt. The new methodology by the Muslim Brotherhood, any woman who is demonstrating against Morsi, the president,
right.
Is rape them.
Right. You know that when the United Nations and other investigators have interviewed the refugees, of which there are hundreds of thousands that have fled the carnage in Syria that is a religious civil war between Shia and Sunni Islam, that the vast majority of the refugees don't cite fear of death, they don't cite fear of torture, they don't cite hunger as a reason for fleeing. The number one reason for fleeing, and it's just dominant, something in the range of 70-80% of the refugees say that they are fleeing because of the gang rapes.
Absolutely. That's what Islam is all about. Look what's happening in Europe. You know, the most remarkable thing is Sweden and Norway, two of the most civilized countries on earth, two
right.
of the most tolerant countries on earth, allow their women to be raped, gang raped by Muslims, and deny it. I yes. deny that it is the fault of Islam.
Yeah. And yet it is Islam that approves rape. The Quran not only says that sex with your captives is approved, and sex with a captive is rape. That's the very definition of rape. It even says that you can force your captive women into prostitution because it's an income stream for pathetic Muslims that don't work. Now, it says that, you shouldn't force them into prostitution against their will. However, and then they say, but, you know, if that's what you want to do, Allah will look the other way and will forgive you.
Yes, Allah is Muhammad, and Muhammad is Allah. Of course, He will
right.
forgive them.
Of course.
I was reading in the Bible what happens when the Israelites were supposed to have captured females.
Mm-hmm.
It says that they are not supposed to be touched by the man for at least 1 month so that they can get over the death of their husbands, their fathers, their mothers. Muhammad didn't give them 1 day of respite. He raped them the same day or the day after.
Yeah. Well, the Yahweh in his Torah has a comprehensive list of behaviors that he says will invoke harm. If a person does it, it invokes harm on them and separates them from him. And of these behaviors, he lists rape. He lists all forms of incest. He lists all forms of bestiality. And he says anyone who does these things is not only invoking harm upon themselves, but estranging themselves from me. And yet, Muhammad and his companions, with Quranic approval, did all of these things. Muhammad himself engaged in incest. Muhammad engaged in pedophilia. Islam promotes bestiality. The Grand Ayatollah Al-Khomeini wrote a book on the proper ways to engage in bestiality. And it's incredibly perverse.
Yes, but nobody mentions it in the news media. This is a remarkable thing. In the Western media, they don't mention these things, which actually the items which would destroy Islam if they mentioned them.
Of course, it's exactly like the KKK in the 1920s. When the internal documents were revealed in the news media, the Ku Klux Klan essentially evaporated. The same thing would be true with Islam. It's that reprehensible. But we don't have the good sense or the courage to do it. We'll be back in a moment with IQ, Al Rasuli. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yara. I'm talking to IQ Al Rasuli, who's the author of Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. You can buy his books from Amazon.com, and I would strongly encourage you to do so. In the first segment, we talked about how by simply exposing the truth about Islam, that it's wannabe God, it's lone wannabe prophet, were so reprehensible that their book, that their teachings were so disgusting that Islam would shrivel up and go away if we could simply motivate and educate more people, particularly people with in positions where they have access to large public arenas, politicians, academicians, and also the media, simply to tell the truth. We would rid the world of the most sexist, most oppressive, most destructive, most deadly disease that has ever infected it. And that's why we do what we do on this program. IQ, the seventh point that you raised in your list of issues regarding the Quran may not seem like a big deal to the average American, but it is a huge deal to Muslims. Muslims have been indoctrinated to believe that the Quran is perfect, that it is exactly as Gabriel dictated it to Muhammad, that every word, every letter, every bit of punctuation is unchanged and absolutely perfect, unlike any other book. Is that true?
Not a chance. The Quran that we have today is exactly the same. This is what they say, that the Quran that we have today is exactly the same, unaltered, as the one Muhammad transmitted to his followers. When the Muhammadan records themselves that we have, you and I and other people have addressed, and as we have assiduously demonstrated and will continue to show, prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that this is a blatant fallacy. The records themselves prove that they are it's a fallacy. In reality, the Quran that we have today is the result of 300 years of alterations finalized in the year 933 AD, 300 years after Muhammad was dead.
So the only history that we have, you want to call it history, of the conflict between various Qurans comes from the Hadith. And the Hadith all tell us the same story, that there were so many variations of the Quran that Muhammad was brought in to be an arbitrator, and even Muhammad couldn't remember it. And so even Muhammad said that forgetting the Quran was like a runaway camel, that it happened so fast and was so prevalent that even Allah made Muhammad forget aspects of the Quran. So we know from the Hadith that, and if the Hadith, by the way, aren't true, the Quran's not true, because the Hadith and the Quran came to us from the same person and were transmitted the same way, that there were huge discrepancies at the inception. But more recently, we found in the vaults, in the roof segments of a mosque in Yemen, the oldest extant Quran, and it turns out that it's not even close to the current published editions. Isn't that true?
This is true, of course. That was, I think, 1975. They found sacks of documents in the loft. They are from the 8th century AD, which is the earliest possible one documents of Quran that anybody can have. And they have no diacritical marks. They had to bring a German
paleographic professor, a fellow that could analyze the dates. It's a study, by the way, that's used a lot in with the oldest manuscripts of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. We look at the script that was used to write a codex, and based upon that script, you can determine when it was written. And so they had to bring in, because they don't have anybody that can question things like this in Islam, they brought in a German professor, that is correct, to analyze the dates that these manuscripts were written that were found in Yemen.
Not only this, he found an enormous number of discrepancies between the Quran of the 8th century and the current Quran. So correct. What did they do? They fired him, and they confiscated the documents and put them in safe so right. that nobody can access them. Fortunately, this guy had taken photographs of
right.
the document, and
yes.
he wrote a book. And they are still threatening his life because he wrote a book, and then they say that he is not knowledgeable. So if he was not knowledgeable, why did they bring him in the first place?
Yeah, he was actually the most knowledgeable person in the world on this particular subject. And by being informed and examining the evidence, he was able to disprove Islam's fundamental claim that the Quran is perfect, unaltered from the way it was. And, of course, every bit of evidence says otherwise. And we'll return to this thought when Shattering Myths returns after the commercial break. With IQ Al-Rasuli, who is the author of Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. Before we leave this point, which is where you have shown from two different positions that it is absolutely untrue that the Quran is exactly the same unaltered from the one that was transmitted through Muhammad, I'd like to just linger here and explain why this myth exists in Islam, why it exists in other religions, and how it differs from the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. Religious people are told that that their scriptures are the inerrant word of God. And the reason they're told that, even though it's not true, is that when that is the case, then it stops questioning, it stops thinking. One simply cites a statement, typically out of context, usually mistranslated, and often based on erroneous evidence, and they don't have to think anymore. And so this whole idea that the Quran is perfect and that it is unaltered causes Muslims to say that I can rely absolutely on it and I don't have to think anymore. Now, in the case, for example, of the so-called Christian New Testament, the oldest manuscripts differ from the text that is used for today's translations in approximately 300,000 places. There's only 182,000 words. In other words, there's more discrepancies than there are words. And yet, if you tell that to a Christian, they go bonkers. They can't believe that God would allow anyone to alter his word. Well, the fact is, the Christian New Testament isn't his word. It's not scripture. But beyond that, the real God is into this concept called free will. If you want to corrupt what he has said, well, that's a terrible idea. You're free to do so. But you see, in Islam, that's not possible because the wannabe God of Islam is oppressive. He's not into free will. And so he has to be the absolute control freak. And so in the case of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, the kind of the thrill of the whole process is having to think your way through it and decide, was this altered? Is this reliable? Where can I go to find the oldest manuscript? And you're constantly investigating and discovering and thinking. Where with the Quran, that's not possible with its wannabe God, because its wannabe God wants to impose his will on everything, wants to control everything. So with Islam, this realization is devastating. And with the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, it is the very concept of free will and of the benefit of questioning so that you understand becomes manifest.
Do you mind if I spend a few minutes reading about this Sanha content, because they're so important?
Yes, please.
Dr. Purin,
yes.
When he started the restoration,
yes.
The restoration revealed that some of the parchment pages dated from the 7th and 8th centuries, the crucial first 2 centuries of Islam from which very few manuscripts have survived.
Yeah, can I interrupt here 1 second? Okay, let me interrupt just 1 second here, because I want people to understand. When you talk about 7th and 8th centuries from a historical perspective, most say, well, that's a pretty late document. But no, Islam was first conceived in the early 7th century. And so a 7th and 8th century document goes right back to the genesis of Islam. And it's among this is the oldest written copy of the Quran. So we're not dealing with something here that is hugely removed from the time of Muhammad. Muhammad invented Islam in the early 7th century.
Correct. Dr. Purin asserts that there is not one single work that has survived unchanged through 14 centuries. He concludes the stories that were written before Muhammad began his ministry were also in these manuscripts. Stories before Islam. He says they shed new light on the early development of the Quran as a book with a textual history which contradicts the fundamental Muhammadan belief that it has not this an unchanging word of Allah. His conclusion was, well, the minute he started saying that these things are contradictory, the Muslims went banana, as usual. Then they started accusing him of not being a scholar. But he is the foremost scholar on Islam in this subject in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So controversial have his findings been that the Yemeni authorities, typical of Muhammad the Muslim reaction, have denied him further access to the manuscripts. The Sana'a manuscripts are considered the oldest surviving copies of the Quran. Moreover, the Sana'a manuscripts are written in a script originated in the Hijaz, the very region of Arabia where Muhammad lived, which makes them not only the oldest to have survived, but among the earliest copies of the Quran ever. Dr. Purin noticed minor textual variations and conventional ordering of the chapters, the surah, as well as rare styles of orthography. The most important thing that he really found out is that many of the pages were rewritten. They were washed.
Yes.
And rewritten again and again. But by the way, in the Torah, a scribe can
there are no mistakes in the Dead Sea Scrolls. Now, are there some? There are no noticeable mistakes. There are. Is there some places where the scribes were imperfect? Absolutely. But if a scribe recognized that they had made an error in copying the Torah, they had to start all over again. And they did. They made every effort to be as accurate as humans are capable of being. And with the Quran, no, they knew they were promoting a lie, and so why not change it to serve their interest? The same thing, by the way, is true with the so-called Christian New Testament. It was purposefully changed and altered to serve the religion. Things were added, things were taken away, things were edited to serve the interests of the emerging religion. The same thing is true in Islam. And this issue may not seem as important to our listeners as others, because it is. But what is important here is there probably is no more fundamental truth, we'll put in quotes here, amongst Muslims than this one. This, that the Quran is exactly as it was, unaltered, is the foundational belief, the pillar of belief for Muslims. And come to find out, it is wholly and completely untrue. That there isn't a single word in the Quran as it exists today that is wholly consistent with the oldest copy of the Quran.
But Dr. Poon is saying that it's not even equal to what the Uthman bin Affan, the very last type of compilation. They're not the same. He also found significant variations from the text used today.
Yes.
All sections are missing and added to with a much later hand. So
yes.
Really, for them to brag and have a dogma, the dogma is based on falsehood.
Right.
And 1,500 million people do not have the will to contest it or question it, because Muhammad said, you cannot question the Quran.
Yes, because he said any Muslim that questions the Quran loses their faith. And then in a previous surah, he says that if any Muslim loses their faith, you ought to kill them. So that's the reason they don't question anything. But religions in general are opposed to questioning. That's the whole nature of religion, is it's opposed to evidence and reason. The eighth point that you raise is one that we've already covered, IQ, is that we covered it from actually a slightly different position. So it's probably worth covering again, because the last time we came across this, we spent two entire hours on it, was that is it possible that the Quran, which claims that it confirms the Torah, actually does so? But this is actually written from a slightly different angle. It's that you've written here that the same God revealed the Torah and the Quran. Is it possible that Yahweh, who revealed the Torah to Moshe, and Allah, who allegedly revealed the Quran indirectly to Muhammad, are the same being?
They can't be. It is impossible. And any human being with a decency and a bit of logic, studying the Quran and studying the Bible, cannot possibly find any consolidation of equality. The Quran and the Bible contradict. The Quran contradicts the Bible in every single item. I mentioned once before, I mean, we're not discussing theology, we're discussing here the Quran. The Quran says, Muhammad says in the Quran that Allah revealed the Injil, which is the Gospels, to Jesus. It says it in several verses that Allah revealed the Gospels to Jesus. Well, anybody who studied the Christian Bible would know that nobody revealed the Gospels to Jesus, because the Gospels were written 50 to 150 years after Jesus was dead.
That's not completely true. And since this program is dedicated on the whole to shattering myths, let me be completely accurate here. The term that the Quran uses is Injil. It is a corruption of the Greek euangelion. Euangelion does not mean gospel. It means good and beneficial messenger. And the messenger, of course, was Yahusha. The Quran also does not say Jesus, it says Esau. And Esau is the is an Arabic transliteration of Esau, which is the one person that God says specifically that he hates. God says that he hates Esau because he accepted and married into the religion of Ishmael. And so God calls Esau out in particular to say, I hate him. And so that is the name that is ascribed falsely to Yahusha in the Quran. Also, there are two eyewitness accounts that exist in the Greek manuscripts. There's only two. The two eyewitness accounts, one was written by Matanyahu, the other one was, which means Yah's gift, the other was written by Yahuchanan. The books ascribed to Lucas and to Marcus are both hearsay. We have documents pertaining to these eyewitness accounts that date back to the late 1st century, early 2nd century. So there is every evidence that the eyewitness accounts by Matanyahu and Yahuchanan were written within 10 to 15 years of Yahusha's experience here on Earth. And so that's kind of the history of them. The point that IQ is making is still valid, which is that Yahusha did not write the Evangelion, that two of his disciples, Yahuchanan and Matanyahu, wrote about him, providing an eyewitness perspective, meaning that Allah's claim is a lie. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break. We're here with IQ Al-Rasuli. Welcome back to the final segment of Shattering Myths today. We're here with IQ Al-Rasuli. The point that IQ made in the last segment is absolutely valid, that one of the ways to demonstrate that the Quran is a fraud and that Allah is not Yahweh is that the Quran says that Allah gave the Injil, which is a corruption of Evangelion, to Esau. And so IQ's point is entirely valid. All I was attempting to do in my clarification was to make sure that we were being precise in the evidence that we were marshaling to refute the Quran. Now, there's another issue, of course, between the God of the wannabe God of the Quran and the actual God of the Torah. Where does Allah spend all of his time in the Quran, IQ?
Oh, very nicely in hell.
Yeah, all of his time's in hell, isn't it?
Of the gates of hell.
Right. And he's not just the guardian of the gates of hell. He is depicted throughout the Quran of being very busy. He's very active in hell. What is he doing in hell?
Well, you know, he's boiling the infidels, the unbelievers, people like you and I, 80% of humanity currently, skinning them and then burning their skins and then put the skins back again, pouring hot boiling water in their throats. I mean, there are so many depictions even Satan couldn't think of, but Muhammad did.
Yeah, so this God that is depicted in the Quran spends all of his time in hell, torture. I mean, just savage tortures. Is this a God you'd ever like to meet? Would you ever want to meet this God?
Not really, no, because I don't need a God like that. I mean, I don't mind meeting Satan. I can understand because I know Satan is depicted the way he is going to do, but not God.
No. No, in fact, I think the point that you made is a valid one. I came to identify Allah with Satan, and in doing so, I don't discard your conclusion because I share the conclusion that most of the Quran is simply Muhammad's situational writings to advance his quest for sex, power, and money. But the Allah of the Quran, in my view, is a little more than Muhammad's alter ego. I think that he was modeled very much after Satan because he is depicted in hell doing despicable things. In fact, your point was even Satan isn't shown as despicable as is Allah in the Quran. And is there any presentation of Allah in the Quran as a father of his children in heaven and embracing his children in love and helping his children grow?
Not one single letter or word depicts love in the Quran. Not between Allah and his followers, not between Allah and anybody else. Even Muhammad, whom they say Allah loves Muhammad. Did you know that when Muhammad went to heaven, to the seventh heaven in his journey,
yes,
Allah mandated on him 50 prayers a day. Do you know that?
Yeah, yes.
But had it not been for Moses intervening and telling him to go back to Allah, because 50 prayers a day, that means one prayer every 28 minutes of the life cycle of the human being, whereby they can't do any work, can't have eating, they can't seek, have sex. So he went 2-3 times at the instructions of Moses, and Allah reduced it to 5. Now, if Allah loved Muhammad, he wouldn't have imposed 50 prayers a day, because there would have been no followers of Muhammad.
Yeah, let me play a little bit on this statement. Do you know how many times Yahweh in the Torah, which was dictated to Moshe, asks Moshe and us to pray to him? How many times does God ask us to pray to him in the Torah?
Not once.
Not once. Never once. Prayer has nothing to do with our relationship with God. Nothing. And now, the reason that God does not ask us to pray to him is that the last thing that he wants is for us to bow down and worship him. That's the last thing that he wants. He's in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, God presents himself as our Heavenly Father, as the Father of the covenant. He wants to embrace us as his children, which means, yeah, he wants us to respond to him and to talk with him, but he never once asks us in the totality of the Torah to pray to him. And yet this nincompoop Muhammad says that that Moshe was the one that negotiated down the number of prayers, when Moshe knows that God doesn't want us to pray to him, doesn't want us to worship him. I mean, the real God is not insecure. The wannabe God, of course, is insecure. Allah wants to be worshipped as a Lord.
Again and again, every single verse in the Quran destroys the Quran.
Yes. And in fact, the presentation of Allah in the Quran is the absolute antithesis of Yahweh's presentation of himself in the Torah and prophets. IQ, it's always a pleasure to be with you. I can't wait for us to be with together again next week. I wish we had hours to do this, and we will continue next week.
God bless. Bye.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of